Welcome to the Manufacturing Executive Podcast, where we explore the strategies and experiences that are driving mid-sized manufacturers forward. Here, you'll discover new insights from passionate manufacturing leaders who have compelling stories to share about their successes and struggles. And you'll learn from B2B sales and marketing experts about how to apply actionable business development strategies inside your business. Let's get into the show.
Welcome to another episode of the Manufacturing Executive Podcast. I'm Joe Sullivan, your host and a co-founder of the industrial marketing agency Gorilla 76, where we help B2B manufacturers grow through revenue-focused marketing programs. All the interactions that happen from first touch with a prospect through the signed purchase order and into the future as your customer buys from you again and again are part of the buyer experience. And making every one of those touch points as painless and rewarding as possible should be all of our goals. My guest today is a digital commerce expert. And in this conversation, she'll share 10 ways to eliminate buyer friction while simultaneously unburdening your customer service team through a digital commerce environment. Let me introduce her. Chris Harrington is the CEO of Gen Alpha Technologies, a technology company that enables equipment and aftermarket product growth for OEMs. As an advocate of manufacturing, Chris is a recognized thought leader in the B2B manufacturing digital transformation space, sharing her knowledge and experience through multimedia platforms, including blogs, webinars, and podcasts. Before joining Gen Alpha, Chris worked in leadership roles in sales and aftermarket with Enerpac, Caterpillar, and Bucyrus International. Her career has spanned positions in the home office, as well as regional assignments in Canada, Brazil, and Peru. Chris's responsibilities include working with internal stakeholders, dealers, and customers to deliver business results in aftermarket and original equipment sales. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe. It's such a pleasure and honor to be here. I love all the content that you and your team create, so real pleasure.
No, thank you. I'm glad we finally got to do this. Your name popped up during a recent episode I did with Kurt Anderson, a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Chris Harrington. I know Chris. I don't know if I've ever spoken to you, but like, I feel like I know you because I see you on LinkedIn and we've interacted with each other there. And so it immediately spurred me to reach out to you after that conversation. And the topic that, you know, Kurt referenced is something we're going to get into today. So I'll leave our listeners at the edge of their seat about what exactly that is. But we're going to get into some, I think, some really relevant, interesting topics today. So
yeah, wonderful. Yeah. And lo and behold, after knowing each other through all of our connections, we also both come from Wisconsin, so we have that beautiful Indeed. Background together too. It's lovely.
I have a place in my heart for Wisconsin, which is where I grew up and lived until I was basically an adult, and until I was about 18 years old. And so it's always nice to have another Wisconsinite back on the mm-hmm. show. So very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Chris. Well, I love a good entrepreneurial founder's story. And I know you've got one of your own because you told it to me a few weeks ago when we were kind of prepping for this conversation. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your backstory and how your company Gen Alpha came to be.
Yeah, thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. You know, it's really special to me because one of the things that I enjoy about my job today is that I get to work with clients where I have sat in their shoes before, right? So I come from a manufacturing background for much of my career. I was responsible for growing our aftermarket business and selling new equipment that really became the installed base that was our opportunity for new revenue in the aftermarket. So of course, you had to do a very good job selling aftermarket parts in order for companies to want to come back in the replacement cycle and buy that next machine or piece of equipment from you. So I've been in that world before, and essentially, so were the other co-founders of Gen Alpha. So we all worked together for a large manufacturer in the mining equipment industry. And during my time, just in my time, we had three different acquisitions. So we had started acquiring additional companies, and we had to ensure that we were delivering on all the great promises that we had for customers. Essentially, this isn't an uncommon story for many manufacturers out there. They're adding value to their customers by bringing in additional brands or in a particular vertical, they add additional products that they think will help, of course, meet the needs of their customers. So we were rapidly doing that, which meant that we had some challenges, right? We were doing business in multiple locations. So we were manufacturing product in multiple locations. We had multiple ERP systems. We had multiple tech pubs. The way that we processed our technical publications and got that out to customers. And as a company, we were thinking, what could we do to ensure that we had a more seamless approach to our customers so that no matter what was happening on the back end as a manufacturer, it didn't matter where we were producing our products or what ERP system we were using, the customer was always getting a consistent experience with us and data and information that we had was up to date. So we started creating this vision of how we would use digital technology to create that seamless experience for our customers. And at that time, we ended up being acquired. It was one of the largest acquisitions by Caterpillar. So we were acquired by Caterpillar, which is great. And Caterpillar was down their own digital journey. So we didn't really ever get a chance to execute on what our vision was. So we all folded into the Caterpillar organization and we got to learn how Caterpillar did things. But as a few of us over time came back together, we said, hey, you know that vision we had? What if we built it? Do we think that other manufacturers would benefit from what we had decided we could build and create? And we all agreed that, yes, let's build it and let's deliver it for other customers and give them the value that we wanted to bring to our own organization. So we founded the company, we started working on our digital tools, and really it was to take technical publications and make sure that information was up to date for customers, because historically, traditionally, companies received with a new piece of equipment or a new piece of machinery, they would receive a paper manual. And what happens is when your machine goes to work, that paper manual is often obsolete because part changes, obsolescence, supersession, things become outdated so quickly, and getting information in the hands of the customer when they need information was really critical. So we wanted to digitize that process, and that's what we set out to do. And when we got our first customer, we all left and really began the work of Gen Alpha Technologies. And 12 years later, we're here, we're serving lots of customers, and our product has expanded. So thanks for letting me tell that story, but it's just a lot of fun. And it's always wonderful to build a company with people that you enjoy working alongside.
Oh, I love the story. And I think a lot of the greatest companies start when you identify a need, and sometimes it's for yourself and you realize other people need this too. And you kind of roll with it from there. It sounds like it's been how it's played out for you guys. So like in a nutshell, how would you describe exactly what Gen Alpha now does for your customers?
We provide digital commerce tools to enable them to either sell equipment or parts online. So we work with OEMs and distributors to help them launch their digital tools.
Awesome. So I want to lean into that. And I think it's a good kind of transition to this topic of digital commerce. I mentioned Kurt Anderson a few weeks ago. I was on the show and I wanted to go deeper on this topic and get into some sort of niche things here. But I think I want to start broadly again with this idea, as I did with Kurt, that I think when manufacturing leaders think about e-commerce or digital commerce, their head tends to go to the transactional element of it. Like, you know, you or I jumping onto Amazon to reorder whatever, paper towels or whatever, you know, and I think it's, but I know somebody like you who is immersed in this space, you're thinking a lot differently about what digital commerce really means and all the different elements that it's comprised of. So I'll kind of throw it to you here and say, you know, share your thoughts about like what digital commerce is really all about.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting. I do like to say that I think it's important for people to define what they mean by B2B e-commerce, because it can have lots of definitions to different people. And really, for me, B2B e-commerce is all of the self-service tools that are needed for customers to do business with you. And it's not just the initial purchase with you, it's the purchases they may make with you over the lifetime of the product that you sell. So if we think about digital commerce and e-commerce and all the tools that are associated with e-commerce, it does become so much more than just the transaction. It is really a self-service tool for people who may want to buy your products, or it's a self-service tool for people who own your products and now they need to keep those running. I like to also say that customers and customers can sometimes be partners, they can be distributors, they can be dealers, right? So for some organizations, they may not actually be talking to the end user of the product, but they still need to provide these self-service tools to the people that they're physically selling and shipping their goods to, which often can be a wholesaler, a distributor, a dealer. But those people in a B2B setting, they're looking for information that's very easy to access. There are no delays, and that it's accurate. So I always like to say that the role of a manufacturer distributor is really to remove friction or remove risk of purchasing the products that are needed. And when we remove friction and we remove risk, people will keep coming back and they'll use the tools that you're offering.
Yeah, I think that's a really great way to describe it, removing friction. You know, think about your own, anybody listening right now, just think about your own buying experience. Like when you, whether it's you're on the phone with somebody or you're looking for information on a website or Googling something, or you're in a actual physical store, like how frustrating is it for you when you can't get the information you need, or post-purchase, the, you know, the support you need, or the, you know, replacement parts you need, because there's something creating that friction there. The information's not there. The people aren't, you know, be helping you in the way you need to be helped. And I think like something I talk about a lot as a co-owner of a marketing agency that works specifically with B2B manufacturers, and I've been running this agency for almost 18 years now, I've watched firsthand how the buying experience and just the way people purchase has changed. I mean, that's almost two decades of watching this play out, you know, and then you pair that with, you know, you just think of all the information available to us now versus, you know, 15 to 20 years ago digitally. And you think of people's, you know, just general, I guess, how their comfort level with technology and being able to access information. And then you look at, you know, I've talked about this a lot in my show, but like there's a mass exodus of baby boomers from the workforce right now. And there is a, you know, infusion of people are trying to bring more in of, you know, Gen Zers, young millennials who like literally grew up with iPhones and Androids in their pocket, and the expectation for how they're going to communicate with you and find information is entirely different too. So there's so much at play here, yet so many companies are just not adapting to that. And they're, you know, expecting their buyers to just be okay with the same buying experience that they were used to a decade plus ago. So all of what you're talking about is resonating a lot with me. And I imagine we're getting head nods, I think, from our audience right now. Yeah.
And, you know, just to build on what you said, because I agree so much with everything in, you know, just to summarize it, people are looking for information at their fingertips. And, you know, we are all walking around with cell phones in our hands, and we've become accustomed to asking essentially our smartphone to provide us with answers. So the ability to search and solve that self-service aspect, because so much information is available at our fingertips, for the manufacturing companies that don't start thinking through the types of information that customers would like at their fingertips, then they're missing an opportunity. And it's not to say, you know, that 100% of your clients are always going to want to use digital self-service tools, but there is a growing population, as you indicated, of that Gen Z, the millennial. Hey, I'm a Gen X who I like a mix of both. I love to jump on a telephone to talk to people, but when I need something quickly, I'm the first to go online and try to solve my own problems. So, you know, as the baby boomers do exit, and we're seeing that from 2025 to 2027, it is going to be a major shift in who is leading organizations and specifically who is responsible for buying and making decisions for organizations. That shift is already happening and underway. So we have to be thinking about how our customers might want information from us.
Okay, let's take a quick break here. I want to let a couple of our strategists at Guerrilla 76 tell you about something pretty cool that we're doing right now for marketing folks in the manufacturing sector. Peyton and Brendan, take it away.
So I'm Peyton Warren.
And I'm Brendan Forrest.
Twice a month, we host a live event called Industrial Marketing Live.
Right now, we have a group of 50 plus industrial marketers from a variety of manufacturing organizations that meet up digitally to learn, ask questions, network, and get smarter.
Every session has a designated topic, and one of our team members at Guerrilla 76 opens up by teaching for the first half hour or so. Topics have included how to do a better manufacturing webinar, getting started with paid social on LinkedIn, how to optimize your website for conversions, creating amazing video content, and so much more.
After we break it down, we open it up to Q&A so we can help you apply all of this in your own businesses.
This is pure value, no cost, no strings attached, no product or service pitches, just a 100% unadulterated learning experience.
And on top of these live sessions, we've also opened up a Slack channel where attendees bounce ideas off each other and learn together between sessions.
We're building a true community of manufacturing marketing professionals here. So if you or someone at your company has the word marketing in his or her job title, please consider telling them about it. They can visit industrialmarketinglive.com to register.
We'd love to see you there.
Well, I love that whole segment, Chris. I think we're on the same page about how the buying process has changed, what people are really looking for. And that's only going to continue, especially like, you know, you mentioned asking your phone for something, literally just speaking your phone and asking for something. And now you look at all the AI technology that's like emerging and will just be snowballing in the years ahead. And all of those tools are pulling from something. Like, so you need to have the information out there for your audience. So transition here, Chris, you were recently sharing with me a list of 10 things customer service teams are burdened with, all of which can be alleviated through some form of smart digital commerce strategy. And this really resonated with me because I think it's like a great way to frame up the tangible ways that people may be using digital tools or, you know, what you would probably think of as part of the e-commerce process that maybe some of our listeners might not be thinking of. So I'd love for you to just kind of go through that list and talk about them a little bit.
Yeah. And I think this is so, it's great when you can break something down into its simplest components, right? Because sometimes when we just pause, and I do this because, you know, again, we work with OEMs and aftermarket companies. And I ask them to thoughtfully think about, for their customer service teams and their sales teams who get burdened with phone calls, emails, text messages from customers, what are they asking them for today? And typically, and people will pause and they'll start answering the questions. The 10 that I'm going to give you are pretty similar across multiple organizations. This is the type of information that comes in, or questions that come in, that require feedback from your employees. And what I will say before I go into the list is that this is really critical, because if you further ask organizations, how much time are your teams spending on answering those types of questions? For customer service teams, it is typically about 85% of their time. For sales teams, it can be anywhere in the range of 60% of the time, where they're just answering questions that I'm going to get to, you know, for information that is taking them away from things they could be working on that could be more productive. So let's kind of go through the list, and you know, I'll try to expand on the ones that might not be so obvious. But product availability would be the first one. So, you know, they're calling you because they need to know if a product is available, because if you don't have it, I often say availability sells. So more often, it's the first thing that they need to know. And if, especially in a B2B world, if they can't get it from you, they're going on to the next alternative to see if there's product availability there. So availability is one. Price. And of course, they're always looking for their price. So if that customer is a regular customer with you, they want to know what their contract price is. And if it happens to be a dealer or a distributor, they may ask you, what's the list price? What's my price? And you know, they'll ask questions related to that. Often they're looking for help with product information. So what are, you know, maybe they need a specific specification, or they need the identification of the right product for either the machine or something that they're working on, right? So sometimes this is especially true in our world where people are working with part numbers or product SKUs, right? Some people, if it's a product that's ordered frequently, they may know the SKU off the top of their head, so they can ask for product availability for a specific SKU. Other times they're calling and saying, I need a product for my machine, or I need a machine for this type of job, and they have to describe the details of the job. And so it's that product identification that there's a time spent on, right? Order status and tracking. So after an order is placed, they want to just know, hey, is my product shipped? Can you give me the tracking information for my product? Or if it hasn't shipped, when will it ship? You know, all of this information that's available in systems, typically in back-end systems. They're looking for a copy of an invoice. So often they're calling for a copy of an invoice, or they're emailing for a copy of an invoice, which, again, resides in some system. They look for how-to instructions. So how do I do something, perform some task with my machine? How do I disassemble? How do I reassemble? How do I safely do something? So how-to instructions are sometimes what they may be calling you on your team for. Reorder and requote. This one comes up. I mean, just having a digital commerce presence for people to access their order and their quote history and requote or reorder, this is a significant time consumer for many of the organizations we work with. Over the years, and if multiple products are owned related to a specific brand or solution, over time, they're going to reorder different products. And what you'll find is when you don't have a digital commerce environment, they need to quote before they order, because they need to go get some approval. Once you have a digital commerce presence, you find that quotes go down because they can always access price and availability and get the information they need. So they're not getting quotes from you as often as just getting the information online and then converting it to an order. But if you have an easy requote or reorder that refreshes the current price and availability, that's a big one, big time saver. They're seeking return authorization. So often they've either purchased the wrong component for whatever reason, or they've had a component on their shelf for too long, or maybe there was something that happened in the shipment that caused the product not to work when they received it. So they want authorization to return. In our world, that we call that RMA. So, you know, we do this in our personal lives, right? When we buy a pair of tennis shoes on Amazon, it's very easy to replace, you know, return a pair of tennis shoes. But when you have to return a $250,000 gear case, or you need to return, you know, a $10,000 bearing, it requires authorization, approval. It requires some information that goes with the package so that it can be received in the warehouse. So these are more complex processes, but typically they take up a lot of time, and these workflows can be built into a digital solution. The ninth thing is that they're looking for service or technical support. So often they may simply be wanting to schedule a service or schedule a technician, or they just have questions related to the product that they're running. Maybe some alarm is going off and they want to understand what's going on. So they'll call or they'll reach out to sales or technical service teams to get that. And then finally, there are customers that, you know, do business with you regularly and they already have the products in their own system. They have you identified as the manufacturer, as the preferred vendor for them, and they already know which SKUs they want to order. They just want to quickly order, right? So they already have all the information and they simply want to place an order. So they're sending through their purchase order and all that information to an email and waiting for some return documentation from you. So they know everything and it's really just a quick process. So the point in identifying all 10 of those is really that most often manufacturers have the answers to all of those questions in their systems. And it is possible to put into a digital commerce environment the information from your systems in a user-friendly fashion for them to get the answers to those questions themselves for the ones that want it, right? So that self-service piece that we were talking about earlier, if you integrate to an ERP system, I can give you a copy of an invoice. I can allow you to check the status of your order. You can get the tracking information. You can reorder or requote, or you can check a price or the availability for something. So all of these things that are residing in your ERP system with a good front end that's user-friendly and an integration, you can now make it easy for customers and dealers, partners to access that information. And what a time saving it becomes. You know, I mentioned the numbers, 85% in customer service teams, that's what they're working on. So imagine if you could reduce the call volumes, the email volumes with the things that customers could answer themselves.
Yeah, imagine how the time of those people who are really good, like they're experts at helping customers feel comfortable, at helping them become more loyal customers, at just making them feel really good about your business. Imagine deploying so much more of their time toward those things rather than all the busy work that, frankly, you just described as things that could be digitized, self-serve. I mean, I'm sure anybody listening right now, as you ran through that really great list, Chris, is, you know, anybody listening now can think like, I feel that pain in my job as a buyer. I feel that pain in my personal life as a buyer or both. You know, like all those things are relatable to us in our lives. Yes. Whether it's trying to get your medical records, or whether it's trying to get your, you know, find a receipt for something you purchased, like all these things are real pains, and they're real pains in business as well. So, you know, what I would encourage you, anybody listening, to do right now is to think about like, where are we falling short now with the way we're serving our own customers? And like, how could we pull that together? And Chris, I know you're the expert at doing that and advising on that. But man, I think that was just such a great segment with so many just things that we all feel that could really be alleviated through true digital commerce.
Yeah. And like I said, it's true that those things are being requested in manufacturing, but I know it applies to so many other areas too, right? Because when it comes to customer service, we're all kind of dealing with the same things. So,
Absolutely. Well, great segment there, Chris. One thing I wanted to get into with you that I know is an area of expertise is the product configurator. And I think, you know, especially when you look at companies out there, like many of my customers who are selling some sort of big ticket, heavily engineered, very custom product, and they might be selling similar things to different customers. But when there's, you know, this huge solution that's going to be customized for different applications and different customers, like, you know, the idea of e-commerce or digital commerce becomes maybe a little less clear to them. Like, what could I be doing to help them earlier on, especially in the buying process? And I know the product configurator can be a really great way to do that. So would love to just hear you talk a little bit about product configurators and what might be possible and when they might make sense.
Yeah, you know, product configurators are so exciting because for so long, the most difficult area for a company to provide answers to quickly was on more complex solutions, right? So again, in the OEM world, that would be either the machine that's being built or a product, maybe a vehicle is being upfitted. So if you think about ambulances, if you think about the fire trucks, right? They come, they start with a chassis and something is built on top of them according to the needs of the buyer. And what really a product configurator is designed to do is to address the non-standard products. So a lot of times when we think about e-commerce, we're thinking about standard products. I need that bolt, I need the bearing, I need the gear case or what, but when you get into a more sophisticated application that might have multiple options that a customer would select through to define exactly what they need for the environment that they are working in or the solution that they need, or even if we think about my grass, right? So cutting my grass with a mower, do I want a push mower? Or do I want a riding lawnmower? Do I want a zero turn mower, right? Understanding the application and asking certain questions that give your customers choices, which essentially are the options, and seeing how price is impacted by the choices you're making, price and or delivery, depending on if it's a make-to-order product, right? So product configurators are really designed to simplify that process. Ask you questions, which are essentially choices for a customer that have a price tag to them. So maybe I want the black with a metallic something or a gray with a standard trim, right? There's a pricing difference according to the selections I make. By making those different selections, I get to see what the output is, you know, and build my particular product. So that's what product configurators are designed to do, is make that process easy for the consumer or the, in a B2B environment, that other organization that needs to purchase something that's going to produce something for them on their line. Again, I used an ambulance as an example. I can use me cutting my grass, you know, all of these different things. Product configurators are meant to simplify that and really give the customer choices. And by, narrowing the choices down, they get the product that they really need and want for a specific job. So it's exciting. This is typically where there's a lot of back and forth and requires a lot of communication with a sales person to understand the needs, the specifications, the work area, the work requirements, and narrowing down the right form, fit, and function for a specific job. When we can simplify that and allow a user to do that themselves for what they're looking for, you don't really need that back and forth with a salesperson. A salesperson can then just take the information that somebody's been using the product configurator and actually go and have a conversation to see if there are additional questions are being asked. So when you integrate a product configurator to something like a CRM system for companies to say, hey, this particular customer just used our product configurator and they configured three different options for what they need. That's a signal to a salesperson. Let me contact them and see what they're working on, see if they have questions. And by being able to access what's been configured online, they already have information that they didn't have to draw out from the customer. It's all available in there. So digitizing that whole experience for non-standard product is fun. It's challenging because there are often rules and specifications and things that go behind options, but all of that's been taken care of in a digital environment today. So by sharing your options, your rules, and the parts and the pricing that go behind those options and rules, we can now easily configure a product that would take sometimes days or weeks in the past.
I love it. My brain is like spinning right now, honestly. And as a guy who co-owns a purely service-based business, you know, I run a marketing agency. This is even relevant to me. And I'm like making a note on the side to like go talk to my team about this. Cause I'm like, you know, I keep coming back to the what is emerging as a core theme of this conversation to me, which is eliminate friction, like make it easy for the people that will be your future customers or choose not to become your future customers because maybe of barriers you've created. Make it as easy as possible for them to take the next step in their buying process and to be the most helpful person to them in that process, to make it easy. Like that is the first piece of customer experience that they have with you is well before they're even a customer. Like I'm thinking about my service-based business or any of you listening who don't have even a physical like SKU. What are some things you could do? Well, in my world where we sell marketing services, like there's a framework we work within. Like we go through a road mapping process. Mm-hmm. We are almost always helping do some customer research and create like a brand narrative or messaging where there's some level of either advising on content creation or using our people to help our clients create content. But sometimes it's video and sometimes it's written content and sometimes the client's doing it themselves and we're guiding them and sometimes we're doing it for them. And then there's deploying campaigns and sometimes it makes sense to run Google ads and sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes it makes sense to like run paid social and LinkedIn or Facebook and how much of each, right? There's so many variables and they're going to be determined sometimes based on what a client wants to do to some extent, but it's going to be mostly based on our expertise being, you know, helping them figure out how they're going to get to an outcome. And so how could we ever create a product configurator? Well, we can ask a lot of questions like, are you trying to like what, how big's your audience? Are you trying to reach 100 people or 50,000 people? That's going to help us determine what maybe is going to work for them. Like, are you, you know, are there 1,000 competitors in your space? Are you in kind of a niche where you're, you know, one of the only companies really doing this? You know, what are the job titles you're trying to reach? Have you had success doing this or this or this in the past? Do you have internal resources that can help with content production or do you really need to offload this to somebody? How fast do you need to get to results? Like what kind of results do you need to get to? Like in my world, these are all the things that could find their way into a product configurator to help somebody figure out, you know, and if in the end, the output of them going through that is okay, I know that probably this program could or may not be the best for me. And it's probably going to cost me either between 100 and 150,000 or maybe between 250 and 300,000. All of that is such valuable information for them. And it's also when those inputs are coming back to me in my CRM and I can go into a sales conversation armed to talk more about that, like that's going to be so meaningful. And everybody, me and the prospect, are going to have such a more meaningful conversation around it. So like this is where my head's going and I hope it is for others too, right?
Yes. Yeah, it's a great application of a product configurator, right? And really what you've done is your customer save time and then you save time. And in the end, you get to bring value for those that are really interested. And so much of what, you know, we do is understanding a budget before we ever make a purchase, right? And sometimes we don't want to talk it to anybody yet. We just want to go see what the available options are. We're trying to plan for a future. And by going and simply answering questions and getting that, again, self-service information all on our own, when we're ready to talk to somebody, that's where we'll ask the more clarifying questions. But now we got everything we needed to take that next step and putting a budget in place or narrowing down our search for vendors, right? Because there's data out there that people want to do this type of research all on their own before they ever talk to somebody. And again, as that generation, that younger generation comes in, they are more apt to use tools like this to help them in their job. So, but I love where your mind went on the marketing side, because I think the concept of a configurator can be applied to so many areas.
Totally. 100% on board. Well, you got me excited now, Chris. I'm going to have something to talk about with my team. Very good. Well, so Chris, as we move kind of toward a wrap up here, I wanted to ask you, you know, kind of one, what are some of the barriers? Like, you know, now that people have heard you talk about this, I think you've done a great job just sort of articulating all these different ways that, or things that are part of that digital commerce experience that maybe people didn't think about that way. But like, what's stopping manufacturing leaders today from like taking some of these steps, from pulling all these things together that clearly their customers and their prospects need and want? What's stopping them, and what would you say to manufacturing leaders about how to kind of break through those barriers and start taking some tangible steps?
Sure. I think, and I'll kind of describe the top three that I see. So the first is really addressing the question where we define what we mean by B2B commerce. So many organizations would say, I don't need e-commerce. I have a distribution network. When in reality, distributors and your partners want an easier way to do business with you as well. So oftentimes, e-commerce, again, isn't about selling to the end user all the time. It's also making all the things we just talked about, that list of 10, available to your distributors and partners to make their job easier, streamline the business for yourself, and now you're freed up to do the more important activities. So that threat that somehow we're disrupting our distribution channel, take that away. At least stand up something for your distribution network. They'll always be honest with you about how your site looks, if the information is accurate, and they'll make you better. And at a later point, if you do have to open up your site to the public, and you know, work through any relationship discussions with your distributors on what is the strength of the manufacturer in doing business online versus the strength of the distributor and what they do locally for communities and selling products, I think certainly there needs to be a digital presence for both distributors and customers, and manufacturers have to work on that together. But getting started with your distribution channel is one way to block, you know, that barrier, you know, overcome that barrier. The second that I see is data quality. Often people don't think that their data is ready. And I would argue that we have a lot of data in manufacturing environments already. And really, you never start working on the quality of your data until you're doing a project anyway. So you almost have to get started to know what needs to be improved that is going to make a difference for the customers who are using your solutions. And again, if we go back to that list of 10, a lot of that information that in a B2B environment people are looking for, you actually have. So let's expose what you do have. And then just like any sales channel, you're going to incrementally keep working on the things that you may be weaker on. And, you know, so data quality and data things can improve over time. I also tell people to use the 80-20 rule, focus on the 20% of the products that make up 80% of your business. Make sure you have good product descriptions, you have good images, and there's good details around those. And then you can start to see what customers are searching for, not buying, and start to focus on the data quality in those areas. So there is a way to get started. And then finally, I'll just mention that many of the customers that we're working with have upgraded their backend systems to be able to easily integrate with other solutions. So there are manufacturers and distributors out there that might be working on legacy ERP or the backend systems that are just not, they don't have the available APIs or the integration of architecture that makes it easy to expose information. So what they do is they go through a process of upgrading their ERP before they move to digital commerce. So I have seen that as a roadblock. If you have an ERP with available APIs, then often, you know, that's not even an issue. You could get started quickly. So those three I see over and over and over again.
Yeah, all great advice, great insights there, and timely in the sense that this episode's going live a week after my interview with Paul Van Meter, who runs ProShop ERP and has had a lot of success there. So there you go, can putting those things together. But yeah, Chris, great conversation today. This is an instant favorite for me. I think this is such a good topic, and I think there are a lot of ideas you brought to the table here to just get manufacturing leaders thinking a little bit differently about the role of digital commerce. So thanks for all the insights you brought here.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So if anybody listening right now would like to learn more from you, or learn more about what you're doing at Gen Alpha, where would you direct them?
Yeah, I would tell them to visit genalpha.com. So that's genalpha.com. We have a lot of resources out there. We are a company that really likes to continue to educate. So I'd say check out our resources section. But if you'd love to have a conversation with us, I certainly would love an opportunity to speak with your listeners. They can fill out our contact us form and we'll schedule something. But also I'm very active on LinkedIn. So you can find me at Christina Harrington on LinkedIn. And I really hope that you do. Please connect with me.
That's how I found you first too. And it's amazing how often that winds up being the case these days. So very good. Well, Chris, thank you for doing this today. Great conversation.
Yes. Thank you, Joe. Have a beautiful day.
Same to you. And as for the rest of you, I hope to catch you on the next episode of The Manufacturing Executive.
You've been listening to the Manufacturing Executive Podcast. To ensure that you never miss an episode, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast player. If you'd like to learn more about industrial marketing and sales strategy, you'll find an ever-expanding collection of articles, videos, guides, and tools specifically for B2B manufacturers at gorilla76.com/learn. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.